Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 161, being recorded on the 11th of Jan, 2017, with special guest Vishwas Lele. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Evan, and our special guest, Vishwas. Kale, unfortunately, had something that came up tonight, so he wasn't able to join us, but I think we've got plenty to talk about, so we should get started on that right away. And Evan, I know you put a bunch of updates in the show notes, as usual. There's been quite a slew of, I think, the slight dip in updates that we had last week has finally gone away.
And yeah, everybody came back to work, right?
Everyone got
and
back
shipped
to work.
All their stuff.
Yep. It's like, okay, everybody, CI/CD button pressed in, and boom, gone.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, of course, I noticed the there's a couple of the SQL Azure stuff that I thought you may want to dive into.
Yeah. So I'm actually gonna go against type here, and actually talking about this a little bit later, but, you know, Azure Cloud Services, right? So the old original PaaS, still around, still under great use, and we've got some new VMs for these. Basically, these are, slightly faster, you know, different processors, different ranges, but, like, you know, we're updating our VMs for, you know, the original PaaS. And this just goes to show, right? I mean, it's not, this stuff hasn't gone away. There's just been additional things out there. The other thing that I wanted to call out was the, we're continuing to kind of grow the Azure Logic Apps stuff. And now there's the integration pack that I think we talked about, maybe it was in preview back, a while back. It's now hit GA at this point. Yeah. So fully supported.
Cool. Yeah. And what else we got here? Let's see. So there's an update on the storage queues. This just came out. What it is I guess it creates, like, when you add a message, you can hook up a notification to get, that, okay, when the message was received, you can get some kind of feedback on it. And so that's a new feature that they've added for storage queues. There's a bunch of new services that have been added to some of the regions, and we won't kind of bore our listeners with all of that. And then there's Kafka that's been now released for HD Insight. Kafka is a popular streaming system to get a rapid stream of data into HD Insight. In the past, we've had to use things like Event Hub to do something like that to be able to take all that stream and process it. But now with Kafka, it's more of an open source, very popular actually in the open source community. And now they could use Kafka for HD Insight to get all that, to be able to stream data into HD Insight.
Yep. Yeah. And okay, I can't resist because this one's just too good. I'd forgotten about it off the top of my head. So Azure SQL Database for premium performance levels, right? So the high-end stuff, we've increased read and write log resources and 100%.
Wow.
If it was 10%, I probably wouldn't have brought it up, but 100% is big, right? We're really, really bumping, turning the dial, right?
Yep.
At this point to go faster and faster. The other one that I did want to call out, and hey, if there's any of our listeners from, that are in South Korea, we have some regions, some data centers that we're spinning up in that region, and we are looking for people to kind of trial that stuff. And so we'll You can see it in some of the recent Azure announcements, but we're looking for people actively, and there's a link that people can go to basically, you know, get in early to help us kind of stand up that data center and test it out as it comes online. So, you know, more continued growth, more data centers.
That's great. Yeah. Wow. I can't believe we're going in that area. That's nice. And of course, we haven't talked about IoT Hub in a while. We normally used to talk about that quite often, and they made some updates in that space too. So you recall that in IoT Hubs, when all these millions of devices that you may have are sending messages in, you have to be able to consume those messages, and typically you would send them to the Event Hub, and the Event Hub would then kind of forward them up to, you would have to write a special application then to read it from Event Hub.
Mm-hmm.
Now what you can do is, but that requires writing code, right? And,
who wants to write code, right?
Azure is all about, why do we have to make people write code when we can do it through configuration? And so they've got this now message routing facility that's available in IoT Hub, where you can, through the portal, you can go and say, okay, when messages come in that meet these particular requirements, they can be automatically routed, let's say, put into this service bus queue or sent to this backend system, but literally, we're not writing any code. You're just doing it through configuration. So I thought that was a nice thing.
Yeah, no, definitely.
All right, so with having said all of that, let's just move on to our special guest, Vishwas. And Vishwas Lele, I just to give a little bit of background, I remember hearing Vishwas at a .NET Rocks podcast a while ago, and he's, quite a regular contributor to the community in the Azure and in the .NET space. And I just figured, we never really had an MVP, an Azure MVP or an Azure Regional Director join us on the show. We've had partners, we've had customers, we've had, all sorts of people come on, but never had, some people like the MVPs and the Regional Directors on. And so I thought this would be a great idea to get him on, and really appreciate him taking the time late on a Wednesday evening to join us. And so Vishwas, please give our listeners a bit of a background about what you do, and to tell us a little more about this MVP and RD status that you have.
Sure. Sujit, thank you very much. Thank you, Anivan, for inviting me. As you said, my name is Vishwas Lele. I work for a company called Applied Information Sciences, which is based in the DC area. And I've worked here for a long time. I've worked here for almost 22 years now. Started with them as a Windows developer, writing some ODBC drivers back in 1994, end of 1994. I've been an Azure MVP, and I had MVP in other disciplines, but I've been an Azure MVP for about 4 or 5 years. And then I've been a regional director, and I'll talk about these programs in a moment, been a regional director for about 10 years or so. The two programs are very interesting, and I've been really proud to be part of that program. They have, been certainly very valuable for me, and certainly the people who are part of the program learned a lot from them. Regional Director Program is sort of, and this question comes up often, what is the difference between an MVP and RDs? And Regional Director Program, your listeners can find more information at rd.microsoft.com, are a group of individuals, about 100 or so around the world. They are not focused on any specific technology like the MVP program, but these are technologies, community leaders, and we have a program manager, RD program manager, and they're called in to provide feedback on specific technologies. So we engage with through the program. There are areas that we are brought in to look at early on, provide feedback and things like that. But the level of interaction is more architectural, cross-platform, maybe community leadership, and also a lot of it is business-driven and solution architecture based. MVP program, of course, as you know, is focused on a given discipline. And there are a few RDs who are MVPs also, but it is harder to have these two things together because one program is about sort of a broader technological overview across this platform versus MVP program is more about a certain technology. Although you could say that Azure MVP program by itself is very big because Azure is so big.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, Azure is, like when I got into this space, Azure was this tiny little thing. You know, Azure these days is, I mean, massively wide. So when you say Azure MVP, are you really talking about that breadth? If so, that's pretty impressive that you can kind of keep up across all of that.
Right. That's a good question. It's hard for anyone to keep up with all of that. And when the program started, and I was fortunate enough, just to give you my background, back in 2007, you know, I got dropped into a project where there was no Azure at that time, but this project was related to BizTalk services. And, you know, somebody invited me to work on this project, really enjoyed it and wanted to, you know, learn some more about it. And so soon after that, Azure was announced. So got started early and have been sort of part of the program. At that time, Azure was small, as you said. It has obviously become much, much larger. And, you know, you're beginning to see a lot of specializations. So, you know, people focus on Azure SQL, for example, or big data, Cortana analytics, or more IaaS stuff or IT pro stuff. So there are specializations. And also, if you are, let's say, an ASP.NET MVP, then, you know, chances are that you're also doing something which is related to Azure. Maybe you're building Azure Web Apps or something like that. So there are those cross-cutting things going on as well. But you're right, you know, if you say Azure MVP, it's hard to be deep in all of these technologies, but I think of Azure MVP program much as a cloud solution architect type of a role where you have a fairly deep understanding of all the building blocks, and then you can go deep into the ones that you need on a given project.
Makes sense. So you're kind of coming in with, you know, the general skills to be able to help, you know, for any given interaction, you know, where you should start, which components you should look at, and then enough broad knowledge to be able to go deep, to bring that to play and going deep in some specific areas then.
Right.
Great.
And Vishwas, I believe this program's not easy to get into, and you have to keep maintaining your status every year, right?
Yes, the MVP program is, yes. I have to say that I've been an MVP in other disciplines as well. Azure MVP program has been both most demanding because, you know, the new things coming on and there's a lot of interest in the program. The product team has been very deeply involved with the program. So the MVP summit, which your listeners will probably know, once in a year, MVPs are invited to Redmond, where you get to talk to the product teams. And typically you have the MVP summit, which is 2 or 3 days, but the Azure summit is like 5 days, which is packed with content. So,
wow.
So there's a, you know, personally for me, that has been the biggest benefit of the program, to interact with all the teams. And as a result, you know, the bar has been set high, and, you know, they expect you to be doing certain things. And both with the RD program, is a program which you're assigned an RD for 2 years. So when the renewal happens, you have to once again, you know, talk about the things you did with the community. What did you do to influence various technologies? And it is not just about the Microsoft stack. It is about open source technologies and things like that. So these programs are interrelated in some ways, but also bring different things which as a consultant, they appeal, all of these aspects appeal to me a lot.
And that's great. And I'm sure that they it kind of elevates your visibility, right? I mean, from your professional role as a consultant, I'm sure these programs help you in some way.
They do. And you know, the interaction with the product team has been very insightful. And oftentimes when a new service is being released or even sometimes being envisioned, they will solicit feedback about feature sets. And, you know, you go through the fun exercise at Microsoft, which is, you know, if you had to spend these many dollars, where would you invest in what features, in what order? So you get to know a lot about what the motivation is for a given service. And oftentimes, knowing the motivation behind a certain service is halfway to sort of learning about it. You know, you understand why that
Sure,
was created in the first
sure.
place. So yeah, it has certainly helped, and you know, to be able to go and you know, Azure, you know, the new documentation site is great, but you constantly are running into, when you talk to customers, you're constantly running into this guidance. Should I be using App Service, or should I be using Service Fabric, or should I be using Azure Container Service? Well, I'm in cloud services right now, and what should I be doing? And having that channel of communication has been extremely important to get that feedback. Of course, the team answers a lot of questions on Yammer, on public forums, but then also in an NDA manner, get some insight into what is coming, has been certainly very valuable.
That's great. So what do you see, Vishwas? I mean, I'm sure it looks like you've played around with different Azure services, right? Both in terms of getting to know them as well as part of your professional consulting career. So give us a flavor for what customers are using these days. Like, what do you see? Where do you see the demand in the various Azure services?
Yeah. So Sujit, if I look back and at the last year or so where I spent most of my time, there are really two areas. You know, one is, you know, enterprise customers, and I'm talking about commercial enterprises and also public sector agencies. They are in a big way, moving to the cloud, and for them, cloud is almost always hybrid. So they have an existing data center. Maybe they have these applications which are systems of record, but they are wanting to build these new additions to these applications in a more scalable manner. They want to build it more quickly. For most of these people, you know, it is about increasing the time to market, time to value. And, you know, in order to do that, they want to, and they can't get obviously rid of their on-premises setup. But they want to extend that on-premises setup with something which is agile and dynamic. And you know, every time we talk about hybrid, you talk about something like Express Route, enabling the connectivity between your on-premises data center in a low latency manner with Azure. And once you establish this, once you have set up your initial security, your network topology, then you can now start adding interesting workloads, more sort of cloud-born app, cloud-native applications. So that's one part, you know, hybrid applications, and that's a mix of both PaaS and IaaS. So many times, you know, they'll say, maybe we want to take this application, and you know, I want to just move this application to the cloud because I just don't have capacity. And then, you know, you're doing some sort of a lift and shift. But of course, in doing lift and shift, maybe there's some small amount of refactoring that you want to do. Because, you know, A, you didn't want to completely rewrite, but you still want to do some amount of refactoring to give yourself, well, you're going to the cloud, you can take advantage of having two regions and making your application more robust, resilient, and things like that. So that's.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Vishwas.
No, please go ahead.
I was gonna say. I mean, that's really encouraging for me to hear because you know, so many times, right? You hear people talk about IaaS in isolation or PaaS in isolation, almost like they're exclusive, right? You can't if you do IaaS, you can't do PaaS, right? Or if you do PaaS, you can't do IaaS. But I think the scenario you're talking about, where you take you know some portion of your app, maybe the web front end or you know one of the web services that's in it, and you know. Kind of refactor it for the cloud, you know, PaaS or web apps or whatever, but then the components that you're really not ready to or really don't support that refactoring easily, leave those as IaaS. You get the best of both worlds, right?
Absolutely, and you know, the hybrid is really enabled. If you allow me to just spend a minute on this,
Sure.
so let's say you have a mainframe application of some sort, and maybe you have some high-end database, and for some reason you don't want to move that or don't want to touch that, but then you want to build some business logic and web front end, and you want to scale it up, right? So you take that, you enable Express Route connectivity, and you can do it in two forms. You can, you know, drop an MPLS network, or go to someone like Equinix and, you know, set up an exchange provider model. So you set up an Express Route, and now you have an enclave in the cloud, which is connected, you know, we have a few milliseconds of latency between that enclave in the cloud to on-premises data center. And now you can carve up your enclave in the cloud into different subnets. You can have different trusted zones. Maybe you want to run cloud services, and we talked about, you know, new cloud services a moment ago as we were talking about the news. Or maybe you want to do something like the app service, and we know now that, you know, you can have a version of app service that gets deployed directly to your virtual network. So it's a cluster. You get all the benefits and features of app service, but it is directly connected to your virtual network. And you know, despite being on your virtual network, they are patching it for you, so you don't have to worry about it. So now you've created for yourself, an environment where you have features, slots and Git integration and all of the alerting capability and on and on and on, combined with something that's running back on premises, a system of record perhaps. So I think that is becoming really a possibility. Now, if I extend this further, and let's just say that we take this database, so we have established this architecture, and now we want to go back and do more. We want to move more stuff from on-premises to the cloud, and we look at the database, and we say that we want to move the database, and we evaluated it against the Azure SQL database, and Azure SQL database has come a long way, and there used to be differences. But now that difference has come down. But for some reason, you want to run your own database, and there are some things that you want to tightly control. Well, in that virtual network where you dropped this app service instance, you can now create some IaaS V2 VMs and deploy SQL Server on it, and then move your database in that manner. So you retain all the characteristics of the database that were in on-prem, but now you've moved one more important component to the cloud. And maybe later on you're comfortable with moving it completely to Azure SQL database. So that progression is nicely built. And by the way, if you wanted to secure these subnets also, one subnet your database is running, on one subnet your app service is running, well, you can have network security groups between them and secure them as you would in a traditional on-premises environment. So I find that part really interesting, that you're able to take a lot of these templates and blueprints that you had in an on-premises world, but then you're able to apply it in a hybrid world. So that's one important use case that we are finding. And in doing all this, in moving to the hybrid cloud, what I also find is a lot of these organizations are thinking deeply about DevOps, because it's just not a matter of going to the cloud. It is also about automation. So we see a lot of DevOps on top of the site of a hybrid architecture. So that's one which we are seeing a lot. The other part that we are seeing is people coming in with things that they could not do previously. And whether they want to do machine learning, whether to do some sort of an IoT project, they just did not have all the tools to quickly spin up an application to meet that functionality. And they have not made a deep commitment to set up their hybrid cloud yet, but they have an important use case which cannot be met by the tools that are available to them, and they want to get started and then just build a cloud native application and see how quickly that can be enabled. And over the last year, I've worked on a couple of interesting ones. One was a manufacturing company in Ohio, and they wanted to connect all of their manufacturing shop floor machines to IoT Hub. That was one interesting project. And there was another project related to machine learning, which was related to a government agency, in fact, where this was public data set, so they could do this, but ultimately this data is surfaced through API management inside their portal. So those are the two things that we are seeing. One is the quick, shorter term engagements, do this quickly, we'll evaluate it, and then one more sort of deeper adoption of cloud in the form of hybrid.
Well, but I think you're to your point, and by the way, I'm Before I moved to my current role, I was one of the technical advisors for the Azure networking support team. So you will never bother me if you want to talk about hybrid all day long. I think your point about hybrid is, when we were talking about hybrid types of solutions, right, IaaS or PaaS, but I hadn't even, just it slipped my mind the fact that, hybrid connectivity from on-premises to cloud to truly allow you to extend your data. So, I mean, that's the other big enabler, like you said, because you don't have to pick up and move the whole thing, right? Yep. And that's so key for so many customers that I talk to, is because they're interested, but it's a much bigger deal to take your whole application and kind of go all in versus, hey, I'm gonna kind of dip my toe in and do this little piece. When you go in and talk to customers and they're looking at that, do you find that they're really interested in going, they just don't quite know how to get there, so they kind of go a little toe in, or do you find that they're really kind of tentative going, and so they're going because they feel like it's the right thing to do, and that's why they're only doing partial? Does that make sense? I mean, like, kind of, yeah. What's the motivation when they break this down?
So yeah, that's a great question. In some cases, they are being forced to do that because they have just run out of on-premises capacity, and right. They're ready to make a decision about a new data center, and they've been forced into this decision, right? I do agree with your first part of your first question, where so there are people who've made a decision that they do want to move to the cloud. They have sort of been following that story, and they want to embrace it deeply. And that part requires more careful consideration, that if you are going to set up hybrid, then you have to think about your network topology. You have to think about all of the express route circuits. You have to consider all that. So there's a lot of plumbing that goes in, and you need to be prepared to do all that. How are you going to carve up your subscriptions? How are you going to divide them up into the network ranges and stuff like that? What NSGs will you need to be in place? And would you be routing the traffic? Would you be force tunneling all the traffic from Azure back into your data center? Because that's where your security machinery is, and you don't want to open a front door to the internet from the cloud. Right. Those are all careful decisions, and I think that takes some amount of effort to do that right before your first application can be onboarded in that manner.
Yeah, and people shouldn't forget too, right? There's we call it the gateway drug for IaaS amongst my team, which is site to site VPN, right? It brings its challenges, but and it definitely doesn't bring all the capabilities of ExpressRoute, but it really allows you to kind of dip your toe in. It's yet another way, yep. Right, to do that kind of that little bit of a step before that you do all the complexity that is ExpressRoute.
So yep. So since you're talking about hybrid, and Evan, you mentioned you're a networking guy previously, so I always worry that even with an ExpressRoute circuit in a hybrid model, at some point, I mean, the express route is going to be a choke point, right? Because all your front-end apps are basically looking at data through the express route. Do you see that? I mean, does the express route eventually become a bottleneck? And then, what do you do at that point?
Get a bigger express route circuit. I say it a little bit jokingly, but I mean, I think we're up to 10 gig circuits, yeah, maybe now. Cool. And that's a lot.
That's okay, so you're saying that you're unlikely to run out of capacity as long as you're willing to spend money to put more circuits in.
Well, yeah.
Put a pipe in.
Exactly. And it's that kind of balance, right? I mean, because I think you see the same thing, when you're talking about, I used to work for a company where we had one site in Richmond and one site in Charlotte. And I'll tell you, the worst thing in the world that you could do to me was tell me to copy a file from one site to the other. Because we had like this little tiny string that the mouse was running back and forth across to carry the bits and the bytes, because it was incredibly slow. I could get to a website faster than I could get to that other site, because we just typically, that is the bottleneck, is external connectivity at that point. But yeah, I mean, there are customers that I work with that have multiple circuits, right? And that's actually what the model, I mean, Vishwas, I don't know if that's what you see, but what I tend to see is when somebody really, they typically don't need that huge capacity to a single site. I mean, maybe if they have some data center that they're funneling tons and tons of stuff to, but typically they've got multiple sites, multiple, you know, regions, you know, different parts of the world that may have different circuits going into the larger Microsoft network, right? So they're kind of distributing that load, okay, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And Sujit, to your point, you have to be careful, right? I mean, of course, you can buy a bigger pipe. You have to do some analysis of what applications are running. It would make sense if it's a chatty application. It would make sense to, like I said earlier, maybe want to move the database up in the cloud to reduce the traffic. Yes, we have run into a situation where you know, somebody was inadvertently doing some bad jobs which are supposed to run at a certain time in the night, you know, kept running and you know, caused a problem. And you know, there are alerts that have been set up to see if what the what was going on at that point. But yeah, you can run into those situations, but you have the ability to partition your data to multiple pipes, and you can get a bigger pipe too. And also the other interesting part is, you know, even though you know, I talked about forced tunneling, where you are taking, you don't want to open a front door to the internet from Azure. All, you know, you're treating it purely as an enclave where you have some compute capability, app service, cloud services, VMs, what have you. But these services may indeed then want to talk to something like storage, which is a internet addressable endpoint. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are ways where you know, the traffic comes in, but that traffic is not flowing all the way back to on-prem. It can sort of be sent over a public peer network directly to storage or service bus or Azure SQL database, for example. So there are some ways to think about that and see what traffic is going and model it.
Got it. Yeah. No, that makes sense, Vishwas. Thank you. So what else do you see? I mean, you mentioned quite a few things actually already in terms of various Azure services. I'm just kind of curious that, like, from a future looking perspective, right? Where do you see these Azure services going? What are the future services that you see? I guess let me rephrase that. In the future, what services do you think are going to become popular? Is it the cognitive services or the IoT is already picking up? Like, where do you see the demand in the future?
So I think, you know, we mentioned cloud services in the beginning, and you know, I if you've been developing in Azure from the beginning, you have to love cloud services. That's how Azure got started. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Microsoft's first party services are built on cloud services, and you know, and cloud services have been great. You know, you don't have to worry about patching and things like that, but we are also quickly moving towards a model where we don't have to have these individual VMs, because you know, if you go and do an analysis across multiple customers and you look at the average CPU utilization for their worker roles or web roles, you'd find that it's not that high. So in other words, clients are not densely packaging their applications on these cloud services. Mm-hmm. So what I find or happening more and more is people have gotten comfortable with the hybrid. They understand cloud services, but then now they want a way, you know, of course, microservices gets talked about a lot in terms of an architecture that people want to move towards. And so if you are moving towards that model where you have different kind, your application broken up into smaller units, then you know, things like service fabric or container service become important, because you know, you have a set of machines, a cluster essentially, and then somebody is managing the cluster, as in the case of service fabric, and you come in and your job is to write these units of work, call them microservices or call them anything else, and you just deploy them. All of the management upgrade health checking is done for you. So I think once people are comfortable with this hybrid, model and the cloud services model, the next evolution from that is the PaaS services, and it could be App Service, Service Fabric, or purely Azure Container Service. I recently wrote about, of course, you can go the container service route and, get a Docker Swarm or Marathon or Kubernetes, for example, and you get a first-class hosting for Docker containers. But then you can also, if you are building App Service, for example, you can just write your code as a Docker image and then deploy it as part of App Service. And similarly, the Service Fabric team very recently, as you know, Service Fabric is now available on Linux. And Service Fabric team recently talked about how you can actually write these Service Fabric services essentially as Docker images and then deploy them into Service Fabric. So I call my blog post Dockerization of Azure PaaS. So there is a Docker integration across all of these services. So I see that happening a lot. So you have a very productive environment where you come in, and or you could go completely serverless with something like Azure Functions. But the idea is that you write your code, rather than having to worry about an individual OS as you do in cloud services, you just simply deploy it and let somebody else worry about managing it. And then combine that with sort of the continuous deployment and the ability to slice up the application to smaller parts. These two or three things together, the continuous deployment, microservices, and containers together, I think is creating a lot of enthusiasm for these style of applications. So my answer is more from a perspective of where compute is going.
Got it.
Of course, there are all kinds of interesting services. API management is one that I've used a lot in the past and comes up often.
Excellent. No, you bring up a very good point about the density management. I think eventually customers are going to want to try and reduce their bill, right, their Azure bill. And I suppose making things more densely packed is going to help in that way, because eventually that's what they want to get out of the cloud, is to reduce their cost for compute and IT.
I personally think where we're going to go, we're going to push up the stack one more level to the point where the customer doesn't care about density. Right, we're gonna like Azure Functions is a good example, right?
Right.
You just implement your functionality, and it's actually up to Microsoft to figure out how to build the density right, so it's profitable.
Right.
Right.
You only pay for the whatever they.
You only pay for what you use. Yeah.
The milliseconds that you're running or you use.
Yeah. Because managing that density is hard.
True.
Right. It really is. That's always been a hard problem. I don't know what the timeline is, but things like the Docker container service versus deploying Docker VMs that can run Docker for you, right? I think that's the future rather than the other way, because then you don't have to worry about managing your density. The service does that for you.
And, the other sort of, it takes away another big impediment, which is, if you're going with a PaaS, people are concerned about the lock-in argument. If I want to take dependence on your API, then am I logged into this? And what if things change and I don't like? But with sort of this Dockerization story, you could be potentially in a scenario where you can move this application on-prem, move it to a cloud, or move to another cloud for that matter, and sort of removes that argument completely.
Yep, that's a good point, yeah. Well, that's just some really good insights, Vishwas. Really appreciate that. I expected that of you, because you've got so much of history and background and what you do, and it's really good to hear that from you, though. So, Evan, is there anything else that we have for Vishwas?
No, this is great, Vishwas. Thank you for coming on. It's always good to kind of hear the perspective of the people that are out in the field, implementing these things. Thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you very much, Sujit and Evan, for inviting me.
All right, and if you want to share any links or any of your blog, for example, you can send me the link and we'll put it in the show notes on the website along with this episode. All right.
Yeah.
Your Twitter handle or whatever other social media that you may use.
I'll do that.
Right.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.